Hi everyone. Good to see you all. Well, Lane is outside. It looks like such a nice setting. Hi. Well, so happy to be here with all of you today. We are in our second of three classes around befriending your fear, the befriend your fear process. Last time we met, we looked at different foundational principles around fear. So, kind of like that human nature around fear. For our time together today, I'm gonna lay out the befriend your fear process. We'll kind of look at it intellectually, step by step by step by step. And we'll get to do a little bit of inner work around it. We'll kind of look at how like a little bit doing it in a group way. And then when we meet next week, I'm gonna demo the technique one-on-one, and we'll have our time together for me to do the demonstration of the full technique for you all to observe, and then for us to break down piece by piece what I did. And kind of like get into the details of it. You'll also be receiving in your member center another recording of another demo and breakdown. I find that like really observing the demos and then picking them apart is really, really helpful. And then, of course, practicing. So that's what it's gonna look like this week and next week. And then after next week, I wanted to just make sure that I mentioned every August, I take much of August off. I never quite get to take all of August off, but I have tried for many, many years to take as much of August off as I can. It's always much needed just to have a couple of weeks off. When I say off, except I have two kids at home, so it's not exactly off. But to have 2 weeks off and to just have openness and spaciousness. And so during that time, I always do end up, even though I don't have classes that I teach or sessions, I do always end up kind of checking in on Facebook once or twice. But I just kind of share to say, that's a great time for you, number one, to catch up on any trainings or worksheets or recordings or just any work for sacred depths that you've been wanting to catch up on. We've got a nice open period of time to do that. Catch up if you can on practice partner sessions. And if you do post in the Facebook group again, it may be some time before I respond, but I usually check in like once a week. So I will, you probably will hear back from me if there's anything you need during those weeks. We do have towards the end of August, and I'll be live on that call as well. You all received information. Makita Pennycook is gonna do a live training around coaching and issues of equity and race. And I highly, even if you already listened to the recording, I highly recommend if you can make that call live to make that call live. I know for me, it always feels important to just keep on hearing what I already know to take it in more deeply. It's a great opportunity to ask Makita questions as well. The other piece that I wanted to mention, I always mention it around this time in the program, is that Sacred Depths is a really long program. I mean, I know there are programs out there that are many years long, but 10 months is a long time, and I just kind of like name it and call it out because around this time of the program, sometimes, like if resistance hasn't yet set in, this is a moment where resistance might set in a little bit. And I just want to name it and normalize it, number one. And just to say, like, we're in the marathon together. This is not a sprint. It is definitely a marathon. It definitely takes time to learn skills and build skills and master skills. And, as with everything in life, things go in cycles. And sometimes in, bigger projects that we're invested in that are important to us, we're like all rah-rah and we've got lots of energy and we're showing up fully for it, right? And then we move into another phase where it's kind of like, like not as much. And then we get excited again. And so if any of that is happening for you, again, I just want to normalize it. Like it's all good. And my invitation to you is to come back to what your intentions are for Sacred Depths. They might be the exact same intentions that you wrote down on our first day of class 5, 6 months ago when I asked you, or your intentions may have changed, which they often do when we're on a longer journey. But get clear again on why are you here? What are you here to receive? What is it that you really want here? And then use that intention to meet the moment and get what it is that you're wanting here. All right, any questions that anybody has just around my time off or anything that I just shared? Oh, Wendy, you've got COVID. Hoping you're feeling better and better. Thanks, Sophie. Okay, so last time we met, as I said, we looked at the kind of foundational principles behind fear and befriending fear. We looked at a lot of things, but some of the things we looked at was the importance of normalizing fear, right? Fear is common, especially on a journey of growth. It's normal. It's healthy. We don't want to pathologize it or approach it with an energetics of there's something wrong. We looked at how fear is something to be honored and respected. It's there for a reason. It supports our survival. That's why, as human beings, that comes up for us. And we also looked at how sometimes, if we think of fear as that fire alarm that helps keep us safe for all of us, I was going to say for many of us, but really for all of us. That fire alarm is sometimes a little bit over fine-tuned, and so that it doesn't really know the difference between there's an actual fire in the house and oh, we just burnt some toast. And part of our work as practitioners is to support our clients to become aware of that and to really determine, is there an actual fire in the house or is it just the burnt toast? Part of our work as practitioners, oftentimes also when fear comes up, it might be in reaction to something in the present moment, but really it's a reaction to something in the there and then versus the here and now. And another one of our jobs as practitioners is to support our clients to create awareness around that. Is the actually danger in the here and now, or is that a danger from the there and then? And what are the resources that we have now in the present moment? Another important piece that we looked at was the difference between destroying fear, slaying fear, even getting rid of fear versus this idea of making friends with fear. The end result that we're going for isn't even to get rid of or release the fear. Again, fear is there for a reason. We want to respect it. It's about becoming better friends with it so we can make these important distinctions. We looked a bit also at this idea of risk and how, and safety, and how there is always something to risk whenever we're going for a new status or a new place or a new habit or, whatever it is, or growth in any way. And how our ego prefers to be comfortable and sometimes confuses the pain, thinks that the pain of discomfort, the pain of comfort is better than the stretchiness of discomfort. Let me pause on all that, and I'd love to hear from some of you, what's been resonating for you since our last session? What have you been noticing around fear, or what's stuck for you, or what new thoughts have come through for you? Or what have you noticed either in terms of yourself and your own fear, or as it's come up with clients? What's been moving through you? Wants to share. Issa, and then Michaelin.
Hi everyone. Hi Joanna. I'm really loving that we're in the befriending our fear. I just feel like I've been thinking for myself how fear is often it's one of those emotions that people really have a hard time with, like whether they're feeling it or as coaches or friends or partners. Oh, thank you. Someone commented on the show. Thank you. I find it with myself as a coach, but also as somebody that has a lot of fear. And like I can deal with anger, I can deal with shame, I can deal with grief, but like fear, it's so tied to survival that it's harder to put into a perspective for me to and now that I'm working with other people, with coaching and helping them through their fear and to not turn it into like a pathology or to shame them or any way to honor that the fears that they have often have roots in like, maybe a trauma, maybe a profound adversity, maybe scarcity, a poverty is traumatic. The fear of losing a livelihood if by making a huge change. And I am really excited to explore this topic deeper, to uncover like how to transform the fear so it becomes an ally and not seemingly the foot on our necks, so to speak. But it's a big, I feel like so many of my personal blocks stem from fear, whether it's a fear of visibility or fear what other people think or a fear of losing, you know, money or reputation. It's like, it might be guised as other things, but there's always a core fear behind it.
Yes.
So yeah, it's whirling around.
You know, so many fears.
So many fears.
I really took note. I love everything you just said, but I want to underscore these words that you just said, which I think just so beautifully encapsulate. You said, transform the fear so that it becomes an ally. So that's not getting rid of it. We're transforming it. We're shifting it. I love this idea, even more than friend, of the fear being an ally, something that is there to support us, something that we can leverage, and something that we get to use instead of always feeling like it's using us and harnessing us. Beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.
I said Michael in before because she flashed on my screen, but I think it was actually Kim whose hand was raised. Kim, did you want to share?
Sure. I've just been very aware of what my fears are since we've been talking about all this, and I have noticed two primary ones, and they show up over and over and over. So that's been really good for me just to have personal awareness.
Yeah, I'm so glad. What are you, when you say it's been good for you to have personal awareness, can you kind of extrapolate on that a little bit more? Why has it been good? What have you been noticing?
It's good because now that it's in my conscious awareness, when it comes up, I have that space to choose. Like, yes. Am I going to be afraid? Or am I going to support myself? Or what am I going to do here? So,
yeah, so beautifully said. And it's so true, is when we have that awareness, then it's not in our blind spot anymore, just running the show without us knowing what's going on and feeling like this is all of us, right? When we have that awareness, we can see, yes, this is a part of me, but this isn't all of me. And then we can start to look at it. Since it's not all of us, we can actually look at it with perspective. And then we have choice in the matter of how we want to proceed with it. Beautiful. Thank you. And I just want to add one more piece to that. That is one of the reasons why, even when I do a befriend your fear process in a session with clients, oftentimes one of the follow-up pieces of homework that I'll give is to ask the client to then track throughout the next week or two when the fears come up. That process and practice of tracking supports creating awareness in the moment more and more, and taking the work that we did in the session and integrating it more into daily life. Amy.
Hi everyone. I had a big fear thing come up this last weekend. I recently, me and my partner both got these e-bikes, and so we've been cruising around, but my partner was leading recently, and he led me into a couple situations that were illegal, you know, riding the bikes in an illegal way, and then also dangerous, like riding the bikes on this tiny little ledge where the cars are going streaming past right us. And I just, like, I came unglued, and I got off my bike and I started walking it. And then all of these memories of other times that has happened to me, where there was like some kind of peer pressure or boyfriend pressure or some kind of pressure from somebody else to do something that I didn't feel comfortable with. And I just had this like very childlike kind of tantrumy thing come through me, but it felt kind of healing to have to recognize that it wasn't just about this situation. I wasn't just mad at my partner, although we did have a conversation to have, but that this was like a tumbling of many situations in my life where I was in situations where I just didn't feel safe and a part of the group and didn't feel cared for. And just kind of collecting all those parts of myself so I could communicate it with him was a really big task.
Sounds like a big task, but like you said, like healing, it feels really important that you were able to have that awareness, and then also that you were able to communicate that with him. And then I don't know if this is something new, Amy, or if this has happened in the past, but the other thing that I heard in what you were sharing is that you were able to set a really firm boundary around your safety in that situation. And that feels, I just want to acknowledge you for that as well.
Thanks. Yeah. It was so uncomfortable. But yes, I did.
Well, like I said earlier, like, right? Like the discomfort, yes. That's okay. But I just really want to honor you for being willing to be in that discomfort and setting a boundary in a moment where it was really important for you to set. Because what I'm hearing is like some of what came up for you is about the then and there, but that there also were maybe some real safety concerns in the here and now on the ledge or whatever it is. And you were able to make that decision, even though it's scary, to separate from the flock and not go, to say like, no, this is my line.
Yeah. And then also the risk to be seen as like canter me instead of like totally evolved in some way, you know, I was just like really unglued.
So beautifully done all around. Thank you for sharing with us.
Yeah.
Michaelyn.
I was vacillating between talking or typing, and then you just called my name, so I must be meant to talk. I think I'm the opposite of what Amy was just saying, although I can totally relate to what you were saying, Amy. I had an experience just a couple days ago of being in a basketball tournament, and my daughter got injured and wasn't serious, but I had to decide if she was going to play in the next game or not. And all of this fear came up around like this borrowed fear of being the parent, you know, and trying to manage my nervous system and my daughter's nervous system. And like, is she even in control of her nervous system right now? Does she have a clue what the risks are? Is she thinking about this? And that sort of double layer of parental fear and parental concern and parental anxiety was really up for me. And it made me think about what I was like as a kid. And I was exactly like my daughter is now. And I didn't have a lot of fears. I went all out. I did it all. I didn't really think about consequences. There never really were consequences. Like, things just kind of worked out. And so I'm really appreciating the different perspectives of fear and how they change with age. They change with your role in life. They change with your function as a coach or a parent or a student or a child. And wow, like, how do we ever really navigate it? I mean, making friends with that, I'm really like swallowing that whole concept, like whole. I really, really want this because I think it's going to play out in all the areas of my life, all of them. But thank you for that.
Yeah. You're so welcome. I love everything that you just shared. And one thing I want to pull is you spoke about like, what role does the fear play in our lives? And it's always playing a role. And we'll look at that more as we get into the process. But what I kind of want to pull out also from practitioner point of view is one of the cognitive awarenesses that we can support our clients with that can really lead to breakthrough and different actions is to support our clients to define what role they want a particular fear to play in their lives. So this is the role that my fear of visibility has played up until now in my business or whatever it is, like define what the role has been, and then start to define what they would like the role to be. Now, just because we define what we want the role to be doesn't mean that we like immediately hop into it and it's all like chocolate and roses and we're there. But again, it's another point of awareness to keep that our clients can keep on coming back to and call themselves on and readjust. The befriend your fear process is, as we go into it, we'll see like it is a somatic process. But what I really come to learn over the years with somatic processes is they often work best as a weaving in and out with cognitive awareness. So we have some cognitive awareness, we move into the body, we get what we need from that, and then we apply that to another cognitive awareness and action. And kind of there's a play there. So sometimes through the body process, we'll get like what the role has been. And then from there, we can support our client to define what do we want that new role to be. Marianne.
This is so good. I love this discussion. So I've been noticing a fear thing coming up for me as I recently decided to move across the country within the past couple months, and it's a big thing, and I hadn't booked my flight yet. I'm on the East Coast, I'm going back to the West Coast, and it was like a week or so ago, I finally, or not this weekend, but the weekend before, I realized I hadn't booked my ticket yet, and the clock is sort of ticking for my like September timeline. So I get on the airline and I'm like, got it all set up, and I find the day that I had been thinking of was still available and all the things, and I just stood there with like my finger like on the trackpad, like not quite hitting the button, just like I knew, like I went and had a 5-week visit and immediately was clear that I needed to move back to Oregon. And it was clear, it was aligned. There was no question of, is this right for me? But in the moment of like booking the flight, I almost had like a panic attack. Like it just, all the fear came up and I was just in my head like, okay, like this is that like fear slash excitement thing a little bit. And the funny, I did hit the button and I bought the ticket and immediately felt relief in alignment, but still now there's this buildup to like all the stuff I have to do between now and then, and it does keep coming up. So I love the kind of befriend the fear, and I think the question that just dropped in as you were talking about it is like, oh yeah, what is this, what is the purpose of this fear right now? Yes. Like what is it telling me, how can it serve me? And I think that's a worthy exploration, but it is interesting to note, even talking about it right now, I totally feel it in my gut right now. Like, what the hell are you doing? And I think there's this difference between saying we want to do some big thing in our life or our business or whatever, and then when you take a step to actually doing it, it's the oh shit moment, right? And our clients do it all the time. I see my clients do it all the time. I have this big business goal, or I have this big revenue goal. But then when it comes time to like do the things, because all the things that you need to do that big goal that you haven't done before, are all the uncomfortable things that you haven't done before, or you haven't done at that level, or you haven't done that well yet. So it's just so fascinating to be marinating in it a little bit.
Yeah,
this is good.
I love that you have been, and one of the things that you just said that in particular I just want to acknowledge and note is that you were able in that moment to be aware that part of the fear was excitement. They don't have to be mutually exclusive. It like fear, again, if fear is part of the process of growth, like there is so much excitement in that. And oftentimes in our bodies, I think excitement and fear can feel the same way. And also oftentimes they're very much connected. So just, it feels like that like little spark of awareness in that moment also kind of helped you press the button. And I think it's a great knowing to come back to that this feels scary because I'm invested in this and this is exciting and this is real.
Yeah. And I think the other thing I did in that moment, I'm just realizing, was being able to contrast the nervousness of the moment with the alignment and the decision that to do this, which really came from a very deep inner knowing. And I was able to, in that moment, separate and rewind in my brain, remember all those experiences I had, and remember all the reasons why this is aligned energetically and every other. So that's kind of a nice thing too. It's not to say that I always am able to do that in a moment of fear, but it felt good to be able to have that awareness and make the decision from that place, even though I was feeling the fear.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and it sounds very similar to what Kim just shared around that when we have the awareness, it creates the space.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And we may not even... Okay, what I'm about to say may not be the truth with a capital T, so everybody check it out for themselves. But because I've had this experience, and I think you just, this is what you were just sharing too, like even when something is aligned, I know people out there, especially in the transformational industry, say if something is aligned and you do it, then you just like automatically feel at peace. But that hasn't been my experience. Like something can be aligned and I do it and I am still feeling all the things, and that is okay also.
Yeah, in a way it's sort of, it's like a lot of like toxic marketing myths that as a business coach, I just hate, like the, you know, make six figures in 6 seconds bullshit. But I think this thing of like, oh, well, my intuition, I've seen so many times clients like using their intuition as basically an excuse to do the thing that you really want. Oh, my intuition saying that isn't aligned anymore. No, you're just uncomfortable.
Yes.
That's your resistance. But I think, yeah, like the idea that just because something's aligned means it's going to be easy and fairy dust. Sometimes it might be, and that's amazing. And if we all can hope and dream for that, that's, but there sometimes is the, like, you take hard steps up the hill.
Yeah.
In some way or other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's
not to say, not to perpetuate that life needs to be a struggle either, but I mean,
no.
It's a reality that our clients, I think all coaches, clients, whatever they're working toward, have a tendency to retreat into at times.
Absolutely.
The excuse, this isn't easy, it isn't meant, and then they bail on themselves.
Absolutely. When we get to Wheel of Self-Sabotage, one of the pieces we'll go deeper into, I don't want it today, but I'll just like toss it. For you and for everyone, one of the pieces that we'll go into is that one of our jobs as coaches is to support our clients to create resilience with discomfort. It is very real and important. Okay, I loved all of these shares. Thank you so much. Each one of them just filled with golden pieces. So thank you. Okay, let's start to look at the befriend your, now that we've got foundational principles, understanding human behavior, etc., let's start to look at the actual process of making friends with the fear itself. And I'm going to lay out this process in a linear way, because that's really the only way to lay out the process is step by step by step by step. But that being said, it's also important to say that, you know, it's not always linear. It's right. Like it's cyclical as well. Always coach the what based on the who. One piece might come before another piece. What I'm going to lay out for you is the general outline linearly, and then just remember it's cyclical and always going to look a little bit different. Angela's asking a question in the chat. What's the difference between befriend your fear and love your fear? That's a great question, and to me, they're very much related. We'll talk more about this in step three of the process, but for now, Angela, and then I'll talk a lot more. Loving the fear, I mean, you know, semantics, but it is part of befriending the fear. So oftentimes what can happen, even when we know better, like I still do this with myself sometimes, I understand, befriend your fear, this and that. And then I have a fear that comes up for me and I'm like, how am I going to get past this fear? How am I going to get rid of this fear? Right? And I forget that the relationship with it, like part of that friendship, that relationship, or as Issa said earlier, like creating the space for it to be an ally, is to love it, is to actually, even if we want it to function differently for us, to actually in our hearts feel love and compassion and tenderness and kindness towards the fear, versus what do I just have to do to get to the other side of this? And again, like calling myself out, I have to remind myself. So like sometimes I'll do a befriend your fear process with myself. And I'm like, oh, I'm just like asking the fear questions in order to like get information out of this and get to the other side. And I've totally forgotten to show real love and kindness to it, to let it know I'm not looking to slash it away, to let it know that I don't like think it's something wrong in my life. Okay. Good. Great question. Thank you. Okay, so the process. So step one, support our clients to become aware of their fears. And usually this is done cognitively. The more that our clients, as we've been talking about, the more that we can become clear on what the fear is, how the fear is playing out in their life, then the more we can bring that fear out of the blind spot where it's most likely to sabotage and kind of like lead the way without structure, right? The more we can kind of bring it out of the blind spot and into that clarity. So we do as best as we can want to support the client to actually identify what the fear is that's standing in their way. One of the things I want to say about this is like, don't get too caught up in, oh, is it the fear of visibility or is it the fear of hurting others? If both come up, right? What if two things come up? Most likely both of those things are at play. But again, this is an art, not a science. Your client can pick either one to work with and it'll get them to the next steps of where they need to go. So how do we support our clients to become aware of their fears? By asking some questions. So let's say a client has a goal that they want to achieve and they're not taking the action step. One question that we can ask to help them become aware of the fear is, what's at risk, right? What would be at risk for you if you were to take this action? What would be at risk for you if you were to reach this goal? Or we can just be more direct and say, if you were scared of something, if the reason why you weren't making that video is because you were scared of something, what are you scared of? When people can't answer that more direct question, I'll sometimes ask the what's at risk. It can sometimes sort of help create clarity for people that can't just answer what's the fear. So what would be at risk for you if you were to really achieve this goal? What relationship or sense of self or what habit or idea would be at risk for you if you were to 100% take this action or go after what you want or get it? So support the client to become aware of the fear. Next step after that, support the client to understand their fear. And this is still mostly on the cognitive level. So this next step is supporting the client to understand their fear. That means to see how the fear works in their life, to see how they react when the fear comes up. The more that your client can understand how, like, what happens for them when the fear comes up, the more we're continuing to pull it out of the blind spot. And also that's a great setup in helping them then, giving them that piece of homework to start tracking the fear in real time, because they'll know the clues to look for. So in supporting the client to understand their fears, you can ask, what behaviors does your fear cause you to act out? How does this fear, okay, we know this fear is what's causing you to not create the video, but what else? How else does this fear manifest in your life in terms of action or inaction? How does this fear manifest in terms of thoughts that you have or emotions that you have? Are there particular people that you're around that when you're around them, this fear tends to come up more? Right, so taking a little bit of time, doesn't have to be a lot, to just support the client to understand more how that fear is functioning in their greater life and not just on that one action step that you've been looking at. All right, let me pause there. There's still a number of steps, but I know I just talked a lot with steps 1 and 2. Any questions on it, or what's feeling important? What is this sparking for you? What are you seeing that's feeling important? Barbara.
Hi. Well, I have a question, because a lot of times I can see like behaviors that I would say are fear-based, but I don't like sense fear in my body. Like, you know, not following through on something, or, you know, not taking the steps necessary to get the results that I would like, but I don't notice it as coming from fear. So like, I don't know, you know, like procrastination. And so I'm just kind of like curious for myself, and I'm sure this is true for some other people, you know, what do you do when the behavior looks like fear, but it isn't how the person describes what they are, you know? So is that like resistance before the fear? I don't know. I'm sure you could say more about this.
Yeah. I love this question. And there's a couple pieces, and Amy is sharing in the chat, resistance wrapped around fear. So that's, and you mentioned it too. So that could be one piece here. Remember, that like resistance, like procrastination, it's not gonna present as fear. It's gonna present as a reasonable reason, like, oh, I just don't have the time, or there are other things on the priority list, or I needed to really just take care of myself this afternoon. Of course, sometimes we really do just need to take care of it, right? But like, so the resistance isn't necessarily gonna feel like fear. So the first step is, and you said, I have a sense that it is about fear, right? So like, if you've already got a sense and you're a very aware person, I'd say go with that, right? So, okay, what is the fear underneath this, right? It's not presenting as fear, but sounds like it might be a resistance that is distracting from the fear, because I know I really want this goal and I'm not doing it. So there's gotta be something going on there. That's one piece.
So I guess that's my question, is like fear the standard thing that's under all resistance?
No. So oftentimes it is. I would say like fear or a limiting belief that's probably related to fear in one way or another. But sometimes what's underneath resistance is alignment. like, no, I needed to take care of myself this afternoon, like that as a true statement. So from a practitioner point of view, we don't ever want to go in just making the assumption of, yeah, they should have taken that action. We want to go in with curiosity and then support the client through self-awareness to see what's right for them. Sometimes the resistance is because it really is dangerous, like in what Amy shared with us, right? Like that ledge on that cliff, like that wasn't just like, oh, she's resistant to driving on the ledge. It sounds like there may have been a legitimate safety concern there. So yes, resistance. So we want to get curious about it. We want to support our client to create awareness around it, to get information, to source their inner wisdom around it. And then to see what the next steps are. Great question. Thank you. Anything else that anyone wants to share on these first two steps, what it's sparking for you, or any questions that you have? Become aware of the fear and then support the client to understand the fear a little bit more. Okay, so let's continue. So the next step in the process, this is kind of the heart of the befriending. Step three is honoring, engaging, and holding space for the fears. Honoring and engaging and holding space for the fears. So this is the part of the process, and you've all already seen me do this in little ways sometimes when I've spot coached some folks. This is the part of the process where we can go into the body if it makes sense for that client to work somatically and support the client to hold space for that fear, to honor it, to love it, to show it kindness, to show it compassion, to show it tenderness, to let it know it's not looking to vanquish it, to really hold space for it, and then to dialogue with it, to ask it questions, to have a conversation with it. This part of the process is doing a lot of different, really awesome things at once. So, first of all, in the dialoguing with the fear, that's creating a deeper friendship with it. That's creating a deeper relationship with it. That's bringing it further out of the blind spot. That's transforming it into that ally. One thing that is important to remember when we dialogue with our own fears, as well as support clients to dialogue with theirs, and this is important just to remember in all of coaching and also working with ourselves. Sometimes when we dialogue and ask the fears questions, awesome new information is going to come forward, like breakthrough information, and that is always really sexy and awesome and powerful and like a big aha moment. We love those as coaches, right? But that being said, sometimes in the dialogue, what the fear is going to say is something that the client already knows. Do not undervalue the importance of the same information coming up. most of us, myself included, I have to remind myself of this all the time, we discount something if we already knew it. It's like, oh, I already knew I had that fear of visibility and that, you know, like really blah, 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 blah. But just because I know it doesn't mean that I've embodied it. Doesn't mean that I've put that information to good use. Doesn't mean that I'm harnessing it as fully as I could, right? So when we can call it old information comes up through this process or in regular conversation with clients or whatever, energy follows energy with this too. Don't discount it. Have it be like a as important and have as much curiosity about it and hold it in value for the client as much as it were a new breakthrough, so that the client can actually more deeply take in the thing that they just said that they obviously needed to hear again. Does that make sense? Okay. So the dialoguing deepens the friendship. It supports deeper embodiment, new or old information that is useful for the client. It supports the client and the fear to start making decisions together. To start making decisions together, to start making the best, most aligned decisions for the client together versus the fear running the show and the client just being upset and annoyed at it because it didn't get to also be part of that decision-making process. Another thing that this dialoguing, this holding space, this honoring, this engaging of the fear does is it allows the client to take the next step in being or feeling more regulated within the discomfort of the fear. It helps your client take the next steps in becoming or feeling more regulated, even with the presence of the fear there and the discomfort of it. So there's always, you know, I've shared, there's always like different levels and layers happening when we're creating strong containers and working with clients. So one level of the dialoguing is the content that's coming through. Like how is the fear answering the questions, et cetera? How can we use that information? How can we embody that information? That's one level. But another level that's happening is through this process of just holding space and loving and engaging and honoring the fear, the client is becoming more comfortable with the discomfort of the fear. And that in and of itself, over time, allows for more response versus reaction to the fear. Allows for easier creating space between the fear is all of me versus, oh, this is a part of me, let me look at it. And then from a grounded place, take my next steps. Particularly in this part of the process, and you'll see when I model this next week, you want to slow down and create more space. It's not like a lot of talking. It's about slowing down and creating space. That in doing that, you are energy follows energy. So you as the practitioner are co-regulating with the client as they sit in their fear. it allows them to regulate more deeply, also that space and that slowness. All right, I'll pause here. Let's see, Marianne is saying in the chat, sounds obvious. If old info comes up again, it's because they need to hear it again or process it more deeply, but it's amazing that we do tend to downplay. Yes, it's so true. Like, that's why I underscored it. But I do that myself. Like, oh, I already know that, right? I need to understand the next thing. And yeah, like, we want new information, but that old information, so important. Who else? Who wants to share on what is this sparking for you? Just everything that I just shared on this step three, the honoring, engaging, and holding space. Carla.
Will you please address what happens when the client's fear might trigger the practitioner's fear?
That's such a great question. So, we as practitioners, let me take a step back and first say, I'll start with what I'm gonna say. As practitioners, we always wanna be thinking about our containers. And when I say our containers, I mean like the container of our bodies. And so that is something that is kind of ongoing maintenance. So, and I say this as someone who for years, and I didn't even realize it, I was living out of a dysregulated place, and so I could get triggered so easily, right? The more that we can get rest, the more that we can take care of our bodies, nourish ourselves, the more we can take care of our blood sugar, the more that we can start our days from a grounded place, the more that we can do our own inner work so that when something happens in the here and now, we can, even if we momentarily get pushed to the there and then, we can bring ourselves back. Like, all of that, for me, I'm pausing because I don't want this to sound oppressive or like a should, but it, for me personally, is like required, is just as important as my questioning skills. That is required. Those are required practices for me. I know that if I'm tired or if I, if I've read an email that's triggered me before a session and I haven't taken the time to process it or whatever it is, I am so much more likely to get triggered in a session with a client. And so the biggest thing for me is the preemptive work on that. That being said, even with all of the preemptive work, it can come up in a session that a client's fear triggers your own fear, right? Like maybe they have a fear of scarcity and you're kind of have that fear of scarcity for them, right? Like, oh my gosh, or your own fear of scarcity or whatever it is. So we always, in sessions, this goes back to our listening skills module, we always want to be checking our filters, number one, right? So I'm feeling this thing inside of me. Is this my filter? Is this because of a fear that I have, an experience that I've had that is coloring the situation? Or is this because I actually think there's a legitimate, danger might be a strong word, but a legitimate danger for this client in this moment that I want to kind of toss to see if that feels like truth to them. So for example, every now and again, I'll have a client who is thinking about just completely like pivoting their business and dropping everything, you know, like they want like a clean break or they're gonna like drop everything and start the new thing. I can think of one or two times where that's kind of dusted up my fear around it. So first I have to check my filters. Like, is this just my stuff? Or do I see something that I want to create awareness on for this client? Like, maybe it's better for the slow transition or whatever. And then if it feels legit, there's something that I want to bring to that client's awareness, I'll toss it in a like creating awareness way, not where it's truth, but for them to check out for themselves. Did all of that answer your question, Carla, or was there another piece in there that you were wanting me to get at?
Well, it's certainly a starting point. In retrospect, I can see where how it impacted my work with clients when I realized that that, you know, I didn't have these skills or awarenesses, and hopefully I got through it and did no harm. But I also realized that I sometimes perhaps harmed myself in the process of attempting not to harm the client, because my unresolved fear became part of what I was going through.
Yes.
And so I think that's kind of where, that's what I'm bringing to the question.
Yeah.
And the solution is the sort of things you're talking about. Yeah, check the filters, take good care of yourself, so that if that fear starts vibrating, you can say, let's just kind of bounce up and down on a soft, receptive, resourceful space, and then apply the skills.
Yeah, absolutely. And two things that I'll add is, after sessions, you know, like if something has been kind of activated, to do your own befriend your fear work. Mm-hmm. And also in the session, if you notice that your fear has gotten like dusted up, when you invite your client to hold space and honor and love their fear with kindness, do that with them. Inside of yourself.
Yeah.
And that can help regulation in that moment.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Great question. Sophie Jean.
Yeah, I'm really moved by this conversation about regulation. I'm just getting back into one-to-one work, and the session I did today, she was, there was a lot of fear in her system because her business has grown hugely and then now has stopped. And it's this like, what's going to happen? And I could feel the fear rising in me. Yeah, shit, what if it's not going to happen? And then I was inside just doing this process of, you know, breathe, what's possible, stay curious, ask questions, everything you're teaching us. And just watching her calm as I calmed myself, it was freaking miraculous, isn't it? That what we do inside our own bodies can then be mirrored, even though she's like on the other side of the country. And then she found her way, really, because I'd asked some questions. She found her way to, you know, I see what I need. What I need is I need to receive, I need to be fed. And she just got there herself. And like in the past, I would have got right in their strategy. What do we need? We need to do this, this, and this, and this, and this. I'm just so appreciative of how all these tools are helping me just sit back, basically breathe and ask some questions, and then they find their way to what they need. It's amazing. It was amazing today. And the regulation piece is so real. Yeah.
So
it's kind of the best job in the world, really, because we get to regulate ourselves as we're hoping to regulate others. Yeah,
that's right. It's like a practice all day long. Sounds like it was an amazing session, and you just supported your client so beautifully. So first, just really want to celebrate and acknowledge that. And this co-regulation piece, again, has to do with energetics, and energy follows energy. It is such a gift on top of the content of a session and the steps and the wisdom and all that. It is just such a gift that we can give our clients in that container of that session, is to help them slow down, regulate, be with themselves in a different way that our world sometimes it makes it harder to be that way.
Yep. Thank you.
Thanks. Lara.
Hi. I really appreciated this idea of slowing down with some of the more familiar fears that we all have, you know, the ones that repeat, because I find that, you know, in my own personal life and then in some of my practice sessions, I've noticed it coming up and I've noticed them, like in a practice session last week, she sort of just kind of listed them off, like, okay, yeah, fear of judgment, fear of exposure, da, da, da. And then she just kind of moved directly into, you know, here's what I'm going to do now, and this is what I think. And I didn't, like, I was like, oh, that sounds like something I should really explore, even though she's familiar with it, so I'm glad you said that. But I wasn't really sure, you know, there are times when I want to slow down and do more of that exploration, and other times where it feels like, you know, it was just kind of going off in its own direction. But I think what would be helpful for me is to make sure I have some of the language around that slowing down and maybe setting up, setting like the space so that we can explore. I don't know, are there things that I can say to kind of bring them back? Like, oh, let's come back here. This yeah. sounds really interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. It's such a great question. So I'll like offer some words and you can tell me if they land or adapt, and obviously adapt for each situation. Sometimes first you might have to say, I want to pause here for a moment, right? Because if the person is talking, first you need to kind of get them to stop talking. So, you know, is it okay if we pause here for a moment? A minute ago, you just shared about your fear of judgment. And I know that's not new information for you. And at the same time, when you shared it, it really struck me as something that's important. And my sense is that that fear of judgment is showing up in lots of different ways in your life. I absolutely want to get to all of these strategies and action steps that you started mentioning, but would it be okay if we kind of hung out for a little bit more and took a deeper look at this fear of judgment? Because I have this sense that the more that we can understand it and work with it, the less these kinds of things are going to come up in your life. So what are you hearing in what I just modeled, Lara, that feels important to you?
Well, I think it's the, it's not only saying like, oh, this feels really important, but kind of tying it back to patterns and tying it back to, you know, I've heard this come up in other places, and I think it's worth taking the time to really get to know it a little bit more.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Showing them kind of there's a bigger picture to this. Yeah. So yeah. It like there's more gravitas. And then the other piece I want to point out is asking permission, right? Like we've looked at so many times in this program, not like we are going to slow down, but would it be okay if we did? Here is why I would like to.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, a couple more steps. So this, like I said earlier, I'm laying this out linear, but it's not all linear. This next step I pulled out as its own step, but really it's not its own step. It's kind of embedded in the whole process, but I just pull it out to call attention to it. So this step is through the process to, we know we're kind of connecting with the body, but also to connect to spirit and trust. So if you remember back to the four levels of learning and processing, and this befriend your fear process, kind of it hits all four levels. But if you remember back, that spirit level is about connecting to something that's bigger than our ego, that we trust it, like that we believe in order to create more trust in the information that's coming through. So connecting into the higher wisdom of a fear could be that connection to spirit. Again, that spirit level is connecting into something that's bigger than our ego, because when we connect into something, whether that's spirit or God or the higher wisdom of a fear or our higher wisdom or our body's wisdom or our great grandmother Betty, who is special to whatever it is, when we connect into something that's bigger than us, there's trust. There's trust that's created there. So this piece is really inherent in that third step three of the process. I could really just kind of have it in there, but anyway, it's pulled out. Jackie is asking, do you find that everyone is able to feel that trust as soon as they connect into spirit? It's such a good question, Jackie. Not everyone so soon. There are some folks that are gonna take longer, or be like, oh, that's just my mind, which it is part of our mind also, like answering the questions for sure. And that being said, there's something, and you probably, hopefully each of you know what I'm talking about right now. You can almost feel it palpably when somebody drops in to themselves in a deeper way. It's like you can almost hear it in their voice, that like deeper dropping in, that they're paying attention to their body. It's not even sometimes about like what is the fear saying, but it's like in that just connection and giving love and connecting in with the body, that dropping in happens, and there's that trust is starting to be established there. Okay, step five. So once you've had this dialogue, you've created some regulation within the discomfort, you've made kind of deeper friends, you've received some new or old wisdom, you're able to see the fear more for what it is, then your client is in the position to make a choice about what they want to do next. They're in a position to make a choice about what they want to do next. And as I said earlier, they're going to make that choice now with the fear voice versus the fear making the choice for them. So there's a much more conscious choice where they have more information and it's coming from a more grounded and regulated place. Now, here is the thing that is very important to know about the choice. After this whole process, your client might decide on the same action that was happening before, not to do the video. That is a possible outcome. But here's the thing. Now it is a conscious and empowered choice versus a frustrating and shame-filled choice that wasn't really their choice. So most of the time, this process will be enough to like open up the portal for the client to be like, I will make the video, or I'm not quite ready to make the video yet, but I'm gonna write the video script as a next step, right? Or I'm gonna just like, feel into what it's like to, right, whatever it is, it's this whole process is enough of just like opening the inspiration and the energy for them to take, and or it might be a different step altogether. You know, I'm not going to make the video, but I'm going to do a really vulnerable social media post, right? Or it might be like, not doing that, but it is coming from that empowered, conscious choice-making place. So we don't want to be attached to what the next step is or to what the choice is. We want to be committed to supporting the client to create awareness and grounding and regulation to make an empowered next step. Okay. And then finally, step six. As you've heard me say probably 100 times by now, there is a difference between a breakthrough and a transformation. So we want to support our client to commit and recommit to either the new action step that they're taking, to continue to befriend the fear and be in dialogue with it. We don't want to just kind of let it, that session happen and then let it gather dust, but we want to come back to, okay, that next action step is taken. Now what is the next action step? And maybe fear comes up and then we go back into the process again and, right, help them make an empowered next choice, whatever it is. But we don't want to just kind of like let it fade into the background. All right. First let me ask, what questions do you have on the process? Again, next week I'll model it for you. But for now, what questions do you have? What's coming up? Amy's saying Lane's comment above seems important. I didn't see it. Thanks for calling that up. Let me find it. Lane is saying this fear befriending dialogue process feels extraordinarily powerful and full of potential. It also feels extremely delicate and potentially harmful. Lane, do you want to speak more on that? How does it feel harmful?
Thank you, Amy, for bringing it back up. I guess it just feels like we are wandering into very tender territory with clients, and I just feel like it's relates to what you say about risk. There's so much potential for something powerful and breakthrough-ish to happen. But I guess I don't quite feel centered enough or confident enough that I could take someone through it. And I don't know, I just feel like it could also bring up something really, really painful that I might not be able to hold.
Okay. So I'm glad you're articulating more. So it may be that it brings up something painful for sure. And I know that you can hold it. So there's a difference between something being painful and being harmful. Like, first, I just want to really make that distinction. I think it's easy to conflate the two, but there are, whether it's this process or regular conversation, there are going to be things in your course of coaching clients that will be very painful that come up. Mm-hmm. And our job isn't to fix it at all. Our job is to really just hold loving space for it. So the stronger our containers, the more that like we can just tolerate. We don't want to pathologize something painful coming up, right? That is part of human nature. I was thinking about you this morning, you in particular, Lane, as I was preparing for, it's all good things, to preparing for today's class, because one of the things I was thinking about is I noticed a couple times over the last sessions where like some questions have come up around the scope of coaching versus the scope of therapy and kind of some of these fears. And so I'm glad, I almost forgot, because I wanted to offer this to you and to everyone else. There's this great book, I don't know if you can see it in the screen, it's called Coaching and Trauma. It is a thin book, but it's jam-packed with incredible information. I highly recommend this book for everybody whenever you get a chance. So that's number one. I think the book is gonna help you a lot with some of the, and I think just what I'll share is like, we're in this process, we're not noodling into, tell me more about what happened in this traumatic moment. Of course, if a client wants to share, it's actually our job to hold the space and listen, but we're not into like, let me help you get over this thing that happened in the past. This process, and this is really important, and you'll see this in the book, is about supporting the client to activate all of their current resources to stay in the here and now versus slip back into the there and then, which they're doing by default. Okay. Is that helpful? Or tell me what you're hearing, that what is sparking for you in all of this? And I love that you're asking these questions also. It feels important to say. I think it's helpful for everybody when you do. Because we're all people of integrity and like don't want to cause harm to others. So I'm glad that you're asking.
Yeah. I feel like what you said about helping the client stay in the here and now, I feel like that's a crucial distinction between coaching and therapy.
Yes.
So that's a helpful thing to draw on and reflect on and keep in mind, keep top of mind as I work through these questions. And thank you for mentioning that book. I'm definitely gonna get a hold of it.
I think you will love it. And part of staying in the here and now and finding the resources in the here and now is about supporting the client to create awareness when the then and there has popped in so that they can see. Oh, right. And part of the staying in the here and now is being in your body now. Mm. And what does that feel like when the then and there has popped in, right? We're not taking you back to the then and there. We're actually centering you more in the here and now with that discomfort that has come up. Mm-hmm. The book again is called, let me put it into the chat. It's called Coaching and Trauma. By Julia. So I'm so glad you asked this because I meant to mention the book and then I completely forgot. Vaughn Smith. Great.
Thanks, Joanna.
Yeah, thank you. All right, what are you taking from our time together today? I want everyone to take a moment first and invite you to make some notes for yourself. What are you really taking from our time together today? I love this thing that Amy is sharing in the chat. Janina Fisher, who I haven't heard of, uses this line, this is a memory, to help clients recognize their triggers as the then and there and then have them say it out loud. Yeah, that's great. Creating awareness, right? That's one of our jobs as coaches. All right, what are you taking from our time together today? Or what questions do you have? Jen?
So, as we're talking about trauma and coaching, I'm just wondering, like, because I do some inner child work with some of my clients, and I do it from the perspective not to go back and relive anything, but to help them to, because most of them just cannot muster up self-compassion. They just, have such a hard time with it. And some of them have such a hard time, they can't even connect with that inner child. But I think that I feel like it's a good way to get them to kind of change their relationship to themselves, and thereby maybe changing the relationship to what happened or helping them integrate it. Mm-hmm. So is that acceptable?
Absolutely, because you're not having them relive, you know, when that happened, when they were 9 years old. It sounds like the way that you're using inner child is actually resourcing from the present moment. Like, yes, of course, the inner child has the feelings of the child, but when you're doing that, you're actually speaking to a higher wisdom place, which is resourcing the here and now.
Okay.
And creating awareness of it.
Yeah.
You're not asking them, like, now go in to that trauma and feel deeply that, right? That's not in our scope.
Right. But okay, cool.
It's like you're using it in this kind of here and now way.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, good question. So what are you taking away in the chat? Vlada saying to slow down. Yes. Amy is saying, most potent for me is that the familiar same old isn't integrated and resourced. Yeah, it's huge. Sophie Jade is saying that my self-regulation helps my clients befriend their fear. I love how you put that. Yes. And that you can ask them to pause and see their insights. Yes. And help them slow down. Melissa's saying, much to ponder on the layers of fear and resistance and what is true fear versus alignment and intuition. Yeah. Getting clear on those. Jackie's saying it's about connecting with the fear and then facilitating them to connect into a space of trust with something bigger than themselves. Beautiful. Cecil is saying fear is an ally. Carla's saying, yes, slow down. I'd love to hear one of your voices instead of me reading through all of them. Who wants to have the last word? The last voice-to-voice word. What are you taking? Marianne.
I think there's so much to unpack, but one of the things that I love is this idea of just really being attached, that you could go through this whole process and they can make the same choice that originally came from the fear. And now it might be an empowered decision. And I think I get that in general. And I think, you know, reorienting ourselves, especially those of us who work with people around business goals and stuff, like you make a decision not to go for the goal that you hired me for, that's kind of tough for me as a practitioner sometimes, but just coming back around to what is the right way for me to support you and to support that, okay, this is coming from a conscious empowered place of decision.
Yeah.
And given that, what do we commit to now?
Yeah.
And so kind of getting back on the track that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because sometimes, I mean, most of the time in broader coaching, it's not that difficult for me to be detached, but when you hire me for like a certain thing and then you're like, I don't want to do that, or I decide to veer off that path, that's kind of interesting. So that's just a good reminder that, I don't think I often like get pulled off the track of doing what's in alignment for the client, but that just was like, oh yeah, in that situation, I could see where that could be a little pull for me. So that was just, and so much other good stuff today. So thanks.
Thank you, Jackie.
I do have a question. I typed it in the chat, but I think we got distracted with other things. So I'm curious, as you just outlined this process to go through fear, I'm curious because, like, I want to be able to do this work on my own, but I often get stuck in my own fears, right? But I think that's a really crucial skill to have as a practitioner to work through things. So I'm curious about if you have a process for, like, doing the work yourself versus being the facilitator for somebody else, and when is it appropriate to do your own work versus like having somebody else help to facilitate working through things?
Yeah, I'm so glad you're asking this question. So much of the time it's easier to connect in and to kind of like give the space and the slowness when somebody else is holding the container for you. That's what I've found for myself and I've heard from others. But that being said, one of my regular practices is journaling from the voice of my fear, is taking a moment to feel into where am I feeling the fear in my body right now. Let me send it love and kindness and tenderness. And then just usually I'll just say, what is it that you want me to know? And just write from that place. New information, old information, it doesn't matter. It supports, I mean, sometimes the information is like gold, something you need to embody it more. But again, the other thing it does is it helps center me. Okay, I'm like, I can get through my day now, even though I'm teaching 5 classes and all of my like need to impress and people are gonna hate me. Like, I can kind of, right? And move on. So for me, journaling helps slow down the space too, I think, than if you just like think it in your head without someone else holding. So I can tell you for sure. I mean, like I said at the beginning of the call, with anything long term, there are ups and downs and cycles and more and less. The times that I make the space to be with my fears, like, you know, doesn't have to be more than 10 minutes. Those swaths of time, I am in general happier, more regulated, more willing to take stretches, less beating myself up in my head or questioning like, like or they hated that or whatever it is. So
thank you.
And I know we're past 2, but quick take, Kelly, last word.
Hey, yeah, I just appreciating all of this. And as you were asking us, I wrote my little piece in the chat. And then when Marianne spoke, I realized, I was like, oh yeah, even if they choose not to do the thing, the coaching isn't really about the thing. It's about the transformation. And what I'm taking away is this place of like, we can like love them and hold space and do the befriending of the fear and the heart parts and what have you, but what they're walking away isn't just the video they made or the cross country move or the you know, business breakthrough, but it's actually about their own healing and transformation. And that to me is just really sacred space. And I'm so, yeah, really grateful. Thanks. Yeah,
so beautifully said. Thank you. All right, everyone, I'm sending you lots of love. I'm around if you need anything, if you wanna practice doing some journaling from the voice of your fear. I highly recommend it. And if you can, I highly recommend doing it more than once this week. See what wants to come through. I'll see y'all next week.